值，过去看的这些比较分析 refer to any other previous response, but I would like to go into more detail about the two aspects. One, in your opinion, what do you think causes political interference of the two administration, and how can these causes be eliminated? So on top of that, the PSC is a custodian of good government, and therefore the PSC would be expected to play a role in terms of raising consciousness around those areas of good government. But more specific to the question I'm asking, what is the role of the PSC in your view that can play in minimizing political interference into administration so it does not affect service delivery? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Member. Mr.
I didn't catch the first part, that is it, the first part around political interference. The second part I got it, the role I got it.
Well, what I'm saying is that the NDP highlights the need for political administrative interference. And so what I'm saying is that in your opinion, what do you think causes political interference? The causes around it, and how these causes can be eliminated. And then the second question, we then we bring in the PSC now, that you will suggest an intervention. Thank you.
For me, my understanding around the causes of political interference in this is around the issue of one, more especially from both sides of administration and political parties, not understanding the role of administration and also the role of policymakers. Therefore, we find that people are supposed to make policy. They want to actually dirty their hands on administration issues. I think it's the least two issues of understanding and issues of training around issues, and also issues of maturity as well. Another one is around the issue of in South Africa, lots of elections and the current limit and so on. We keep changing members of parliament, ministers and so on, and issues and so on. So we don't have the good care of people who are actually understanding these issues. And it takes time for people to actually amass experience around the issues of administration and interference. And also, interference sometimes could be caused by corruption on a person. People really wanting to actually take it so that they can actually manipulate processes, so that they can actually get money and benefit personally from those issues. That will also be a factor. The issues, and I think, and also again, if people don't understand deployment and so on, they also want to appease their bosses and do things that are not in accordance with the legal prescripts, you know. And it's for me that those are the causes. And in summary, they relate to issues around understanding some of these issues as well, wanting to actually personally benefit from some of these things. What would be the role of the PSC in minimizing this? Doing investigations on this, one, is critical, and I don't think that the PSC could do this alone, because it would depend on the extent and the role of the PSC in terms of what has actually happened. But it's to do investigation, make sure that the reports of the investigation reach the executive authority and also parliament, and have measures to follow up on the reports that have been issued. Another issue for the role, and I think it comes out in a number of reports, and I think the so-called Kadasman report reports on this around the issue of the awareness of ordinary citizens about the Public Service Commission. For me, the role is to make people aware of the functions of the Public Service Commission, so that they are able, one of the functions is the hotline, you know. Then they are able to, if they have issues, they can always report those issues in the hotline. one is around the issue of, I know it's not part of the mandate of the, but I think if we raise the awareness around the issue of educating, around the issues of corruption, maybe it's important for the country as well, because we always talk about corruption, but we have a corruption busting system, but we don't have a system that educates people about what is corruption. You know, if you come to rural areas as well and you give me a sheep and you thank me, and what other people don't know that because I'm a mayor and a chairperson, that might amount to corruption. And therefore, as much as we want to deal with issues of corruption, want to arrest people and so on, promotion is also important to actually educate people about what are the elements of corruption. What is this act called the Corruption Act? What is it when you talk about wasteful expenditure? What is it when you talk about maladministration? So what is it when you talk about PCMA? So what is corruption? So for me, the institution, the Public Service Commission, the Public Protector, the Human Rights Commission, and other, the NPA, must have a program around educating people about corruption. What is corruption? And some people really know what is corruption. And we must not assume that people know what is corruption. Because before 1994, all of us will come, I was KwaZulu-Natal boy, maybe someone was from here and so on, that different values in different societies. Therefore, it's important for us to have one value. If we are saying, as a country, we are adopting that these are the elements of corruption, therefore, we must also agree on that, to say these are elements, and everybody should know, we must educate people around that. And also, the role of the Public Services well, Commission is to actually ensure that when those matters are reported to Parliament as well is able to actually hold government departments accountable in legislatures as well, because the Public Service has operated at that level. But the other very important issue, which is for me that relates to interface and what we should do, is that in most cases we talk about corruption, I'm not saying we should not. We always focus on high profile cases, which is important. But we must also educate ordinary public servants about corruption. A person is going to book accommodation for me, because there are also elements of corruption at that particular level. Therefore, if we talk about corruption, and I think at Parliament we can have a program, public service will have a program about educating public service around the issue of corruption and how we should actually bust corruption. So, Honourable Sam, I think for me, that's how we should, those are the causes of the interface between political interference, as well as on how we should actually deal with the issues of corruption and the role of the public service in terms of corruption. And I think it could actually play a bigger role in terms of that. But I know that the public service will only focus on public service, but corruption in most cases, there are two or three people involved. In most cases, the private sector is also involved. How do you draw in the private sector as well and make sure that they also deal with issues of corruption and they get the same flag that government officials get when they've actually corrupted people? So those are also critical issues that are also critical. Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks for
having me. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. Let's go to your further training, sir, and prudence in terms of how you handle money. Because I don't think corruption should. You see, on 2.24, you said you elected to attend a 1-month course on writing skill in Massachusetts. How much does that cost us? How do you take responsibility for that type of an expenditure related to the question that is in front of you of how you handle issues that are related to corruption? Because I'm definitely to show my mind. A 1-month course so far should be costing the taxpayers a lot of money. And I mean, how do you come to such a decision as a manager to decide on those type of things if you want to run a capable system that does have good results? What example do you set with those types as a manager yourself? Because I can see that all the other degrees, why do you need a 1 month skills, writing skills, just go and write? Why would you take such a type of a decision?
Thank you very much, Honorable Boy. If you go back to my CV and you look at my CV, that course was attended in 1997 or 98. And I was still honing my skills around what I actually wanted to do. That course that happened in the University of Massachusetts was a sponsored course. I got a sponsor because I really wanted to understand so that I would be able to write and so on. It was sponsored by the very same university and took various African scholars to come and attend. So there was no money. Someone paid, it's important, but I did not take the money from the coffers to go and attend the course. But I can assure you, Honorable Boy, that when you look at the Commission for Gender Equality report that are before this legislature, and I think one of the most the reports, if you go to a library, could see them and look at how those reports are written and check the value for money those people have actually assisted me to do that one course. Not just one course, but you continue writing and sending things and they assist you. So as a person was developing at the time, I see the value for money for that course, and I think the South African society and the public benefited from that one-month course. And I think it assisted me as a rural boy as well, because remember, I come from the Bantu education. Some of these things, even speaking and writing, they were not good, and therefore we had to actually, for us to engage in this particular part of the forum, we have to actually make sure that we equip ourselves. And I think for me, learning from different types of people, we come from different types of all angles of the world on how they write on a poem. And I think that has benefited not only me, but the Commission for Gender Equality, the Correctional Services Department, and so on and so forth. So for me, I think it was really for my focus.
Thank you, Honorable Member.
Yeah.
Honorable Death.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I was tempted to ask you this question, but I don't think I'm going to ask you it because I meet you at the woman in the presidency, which you report me most of the time there. But I think maybe it will not be fair to ask you this question because you're a commissioner, a gender commissioner, and when you look at issues affecting women in the country has largely remained unsolved. And the challenges facing women is still very, very, very great. And the gender commission is supposed to be the instrument that we are using to deal with the issues affecting women. So I just want to ask you a question around this, but I'm not going to ask you that. I just want to make that comment. But maybe you can tell me, what is your definition of good governance? What's your own, not the textbook definition, your own definition, your view, what is good governance and governance? And then you can then perhaps list the textbook five principles of good governance. But just, I just want to hear your own personal view on what your views about your view of good governance, what is your definition of it? Thank you.
I'm also tempted just to have a swipe on what she said about the gender commission.
Mm.
The gender commission now is one of the best institutions in the country. As we speak, we have received a clean audit, there are no issues. As a commission, we have actually performed, achieved more than 95 of our annual performance as per the parliamentary agreement we've entered into as a gender commission. Really, the gender issues are not only issues that could be solved with the gender commission, but we have to actually work together to do that. I agree that there are challenges that we have as an institution, but when the institution was in 2007, when I started as a commissioner, you can ask anyone, any member, And I can tell you that the Gender Commission, working with other commissioners as well, is doing very well. We are putting political parties on toes about gender representation. We are putting private sector on toes about gender representation. We are doing our best, but there's a lot of improvement that we still need to make as an institution. Let me come to the issue of good government, excellent government. Good governance has its own principles. One of those principles is around the issue of you must be transparent. Things that you do must be able to share with other people. Don't do things behind closed doors. Good government must have principles and policies that guide them. If you look now in the Commission for Gender Equality, I chair a committee called Good Government and Ethics Committee. And good government should actually, for example, it must also have standards on how issues of ethics are going to be dealt with. One of the good governance, for example, one of the issues that always confront good governance around the issue of disclosure. You know, must be able to disclose, must be able to actually be transparent about things that you do. But good governance should also follow processes. And good governance should also be ensures that people, for example, a good governance organization that actually speaks to issues of good governance should also make sure that you do what you've been said to do. You know, if you are said to actually deliver roads, you must deliver roads. And you must also do that within the ambit of the law. Because you will find that the institutions that are doing very well in terms of delivering maybe houses or roads and so on, but they are not adhering to the financial management side of things. So for me, that is good governance. And in terms of good governance, must make sure that all what you do, your financial position, how you do your work, is all there. And the critical principle of good governance is public participation. The public must adhere to the values and the views and the programs of that particular of the organization as well. And good governance as well is also about collaboration and working with other like-minded institutions on how we should actually deliver services.
Honorable Kipoi, we just want to make a follow-up from Honorable Death's question.
No, Chair, I don't hear you going back to your earlier statement of one value. If they are dealing with issues of governance, if they are dealing with the issue that you had to go to Massachusetts just to go and upgrade your skills, where does the one value lie? What informs it? It seems to be confusing me. What are you purporting to tell us to be effective? Which vision are you setting?
You mean about the issues, the vision around the issues of good governance?
Well, you see, you remember you spoke, it is, I'm just worried sometimes we talk too much. Because you spoke to the issue of one value, and I'm trying to listen to you patiently, how do you assemble that one value? And I had asked you earlier the question of how you went so far to America just to go get writing skills, like lack of confidence in our education system, because you're quite educated. I was asking you the question of good governance. So within that, I'm trying to work out exactly how do you promote this one value that you're talking about, even in relation to good governance.
Mr. Shoki,
I don't
know. No, Chair. I think the issue, if I can answer from the point, the issue around one bill for even attending that course for me, is trying to actually add to that one view which is going to assist the country to actually move forward. In terms of good governance, Honorable Boy, as well, our value are about the issues of sharing, all of us, and we all agree. One of the principles as well of good governance, which is one value, is the principles of Ubuntu. So when I attended the course, I was not just attending the course that I can benefit as an individual, no. I attended the course so that at least everyone could actually benefit. So the issue of one value that all of us agree upon on these issues still is very central on our point. And it's important that all of us, when we deal with issues of good governance, are able to actually deal with some of those issues. And what underpins that one value, and when you look at the constitution per se, and the values that are in the constitution, the human dignity, the equality, and so on, we really see that all those values, that value for us, must be informed by the founding provisions of the constitution. And even good governance as well should be assisted by that. But again, when you look at the issue of good governance as well, when we have a board and so on, the board has subcommittees and so on, one value is about the vision, for example, of the PC. Where do you want to take the Public Service Commission as the board? What are responsibilities of the board? What are responsibilities of the secretary? How do you actually take this organization forward? So for me, the one value for all of us is developing the country, but there are different phases for now to actually make sure that our country arrives at that particular board, want to see a developed country and so on. So whatever I was doing and so on, it was not just for my own personal, it was for the benefit of everyone.
Mr. Shock, I think you have exhausted the response on this. Let's go. Honorable
Thank you, Chair. My name is Matala Ndombela, member of the committee. I'm on the strengthening oversight on the issue of entities and the oversight. The PSC is assigned an advisory and oversight role, which includes promoting values. And the NDP recommends that the champions of the oversight role of the PC, can I rephrase that? The NDP recommended the strengthening of the oversight role of the PSC by requiring departments to implement its recommendations. Recommendations by PSC are partially implemented. What causes the weakness of failing to implement? Or what causes the gaps that resulted departments not implementing the recommendation? And how can Parliament assist the PSC in enforcing such recommendations? What should be done to enforce implementation of these recommendations? And what could be your strategy in ensuring enforceability of such recommendations?
Thank you, Honorable President. Let's show it over to you. You have exhausted your questions, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just looking at what causes the weaknesses. The issue about recommendations is that I think it does not only apply to the PSC, it also applies to other oversight bodies like the Chartered Institution. It's around the issue of departments not taking recommendations seriously. It's also the weakness around the issue of departments where we don't have sanctions as oversight bodies where department did not implement those recommendations. So now there is a constitutional court case which I think to say are Chartered Institution recommendations binding or not. The court says yes. I think that would also apply to the Chapter 10 of the Constitution as well. But the weaknesses sometimes are also caused by people not understanding the recommendations. by the Public Service Commission and administrations not giving clarity on how to implement those recommendations. So it's always important to ensure that when you issue the recommendation, you give a directive to that institution to say they must also give you an implementation plan of that recommendation on how they're going to actually implement that recommendation. Once you issue the report, you do that. But it's also important that what institutions normally don't do is they give the report to the executive authority and not lodge the report to Parliament. So it's important that when the report is completed, when you give it to the executive authority, because the Constitution also says that you can report at any time at the Public Service Commission, you also lodge that report with Parliament. That's what you normally do as a Commission for Gender Equality. So that Parliament will also assist you to actually hold that particular government departments accountable. But you also have your own mechanism. But I also think that we must also amend the Public Service Act and Public Service Act and Public Service Commission Act, as I should say, and include that as a portfolio committee that the recommendations are binding, so that people are supposed to implement the recommendations of PSC. They know that they are binding. So it's also important about the strategy. The strategy. My strategy was to actually make sure that it's important that the PSC, when I checked, is able to report to our report at the parliament level, as well as send a report to the executive authority about this particular issue. So they were able to deal these matters check us in.
Thank you so much, Honorable. Thank you so much, Honourable Chairperson. I'm Suzanne Dlamini Dubakan. Firstly, I want to understand if you can highlight to the panel what do you understand about fit and proper, because when I was looking at your motivational letter, you are saying you perceive yourself as a fit and proper person. That's the first question. The second question is, I'm trying to look at your whereabouts, the moving around, the way you move around. You know, you 1994, 1992 to 1994, according to your CV, you were at the University of Natal doing the Bachelor of Arts degree. I'm assuming it's a full-time because it was 1992, 1993, 1994, and then you graduated in 1994. However, though, having said that, 1994, you were a secretary of the paralegal committee. So I don't know how that married your full-time studies and being a secretary of that committee. 1994, you did something that is very difficult to do the research in 1994 while you are studying in Durban. And then it has even sociology 3, which is quite difficult because the research that goes in there is quite detailed. Sociology itself is a very detailed study. So I just need a clarity on that movement. Your movements there, I find them having some concerns. Two, you were employed by the commission in 2002 and 2005. You were a commissioner. Commission on the Gender Equality, provincial coordinator, da 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 da. You left the same commission on gender equality, you left them. You decided to become a deputy director on the Correctional Service, Correctional Supervision and Parole Board. You became a deputy director. But for some reason, you decided to go back again to the commissioner, where you automatically became a deputy chairman and acting. Can you just explain that? how do you quickly move? Because you know that in the public service there are levels of the notches that you move around, isn't that, sir? And I find you like jumping from that level going to that level. How does that happen? Thank you, Chair.
That is correct. What is in my CV is correct. 1992 to 1994, I was
at UNICEF. Sorry, Chairperson. The other thing, your certificate, you did not attach them. So I was trying to verify your certificate, and because I was trying to check this, and there are no certificates attached.
Chairperson, I anticipated that I have the certificates here. Luckily, the bag that was lost is not the one that has certificates. The one that has certificates is here. So I'll give them to the committee. They're just there. So that the committee will see those certificates. 1992 to 1994, I was at the university. Once I was at the University of KZN, I was staying in Ndwetu. Ndwetu is not far away from University of KZN. Is about 40 kilometers, 50, depending whether I go to Mzinyati and so on. A secretary of the political committee was a community initiative which the community asked me to actually be the secretary of. So it was normally sitting on weekends, not every weekend, once a month or twice a month. So it was just a community that was not working. So I was still staying at university but going home now and again.
I need your whereabouts here. You were a full time student. I know I come from KZN too, so I know exactly the place they're talking about. You are at the UKZN, yeah, full time there doing your degree.
Sure.
But you find yourself at Ndwetu being a secretariat, which is a community work. Now, I just want, just clear it for me. How did you do that?
Let me clear this one. There was an NGO in KZN that was dealing with paralegal work throughout the province. And they were working with communities. Being a secretary is not that I was working, no. There were people who were working on the ground, but I was just a secretary of the committee, just taking minutes when the committee was sitting. It was not a full-time job. I was only going there just to take minutes, just for that. But there were people who were serving in the paralegal committee who were working full-time. I was just assisting with the taking of minutes. I was not working. I was staying at university at the rest at the time. So I would only come when they come, when there's a meeting. Sometimes I miss some of the meetings because I was a student. But I was also a deputy secretary. So I would also take minutes. But when I'm there, I took minutes. This is what's happening because you know that it was in Tafama. So that's why this was happening. And I in Nkosi Shanga. I grew up in Ndwetu in Tafama as well as Mvungwini and so on. So that's what has happened. The research all of the members are talking about is part of my sociology. Third year a degree. So I included it there because about crime and so on. It's not that it's outside.
Sorry, Chairperson. Let's just tell you I've got a problem. You know, when you do a degree, you'll excuse me, Mr. Shon, to become a public service commissioner, that's why I ask you about what do you understand about fit and proper, because it has got to do with integrity and honesty about it. Now, I'm giving an answer. You don't need to answer it anymore. Now, your CV is giving me serious concerns. Like what I'm saying now, if you are doing a degree, an undergraduate degree has got particular modules and some measures, if you do want to do some measures. Now you can't take a particular module, which is a research, and you call that a research. Because now if you say a research in 1994, it means you undertook a research and you followed the research methodology to come up with a particular outcome and the findings. So you are actually, the CV is misleading. Can you defend that? Mr. Schultz, one second. I think probably Mr. Schultz has responded to your question. The only thing is that we are, is not up to the satisfactory. I would say what we have done, we have raised it, he's aware of that one. But he can respond. My problem is that the way he has explained it and the way she has explained it, which means we'll go on explaining that.
Sure.
Other than say that, why did you separate it?
Yeah.
What was the intention in terms of us looking at your CV?
No, it's always been there. My separate is because when you do a third year degree, there was a component to say you must do research on this. And I think that for me, not that I was trying to highlight it, but I was trying to highlight Chairperson that whilst I was doing my junior degree, there was a component of doing research around crime and so on at the university level. So I still agree that it's part and parcel of my junior degree. It's not separate from my junior degree. So, Chair, can I also come
to... I'm fine, Chair. I'm okay.
Chair, there were also questions about 2000. Yes, indeed, 2002-2005. That position was an assistant director, being a provincial coordinator at the time, and I moved to correctional services to a deputy director, chairing the parole board. Then, when I was still there for 2.5 years, there were nominations for commissioners at the Commission for Gender Equality. I was nominated. I came to this parliament. I was also appointed as a commissioner. Then I went back as a commissioner. In the same year, when we were a commissioner, then commissioners, in terms of the CGE Act, commissioners are the ones who actually appointed the deputy chair. The deputy chair position was up, and commissioners appointed me as a deputy chairperson of the commission. So being the, like for example now I'm the chair, I'm also a commissioner for the Gender Commission. So being the deputy chairperson, I also need to be a commissioner. So I was a commissioner and a deputy chair. Like now, we can't be a chair not being the commissioner. So at that level as well, even ours, and the fit and proper for me is somebody who does not have standards, a person who actually have all the requirements of the job, and is somebody who's actually qualified to do the job, and is also somebody who's able to have judgment that are going to actually take the organization forward. And I think in terms of the CV that I put before the committee, there are no shenanigans about that particular CV. Those things I've put there are things that I've actually done as a member, as a citizen of South Africa. So those are things that actually indicate what I've actually done for the community as well, and those are also the things that actually indicate where I've been as a citizen of this country, Chairperson. So in terms of fit and proper, I regard myself as a fit and proper person, and I thought this close, and even if you come to Parliament now, the things I do for the General Commission, you could see that I'm fit and proper. I think even your vetting as well is going to actually assist you to actually see that really I'm a fit and proper person. As a person who's as a transparent as a person who's actually going to actually share whatever he knows about himself and about the country.
Thank you so much, Mr. Schultz. I think you've taken my latter part of my the question that I was going to ask from you, because I was going to ask you what value add do you think you're going to bring to the Public Service Commission if you get the opportunity to be appointed. Is there anything that you'd like to raise to the panel? Question or any comment?
So you don't want me to answer the last question, you think that I've answered it, Chairperson?
If you want to take it, you may take it. But I was just saying it aloud in terms of being consistent in terms of the question that I've been asking to all candidates.
Yeah. No, I can be just be brief, Chairperson, that what I'm bringing to the commission, I've been a commissioner for 9.5 years. As a commissioner for Gender Commission, I've been involved in policy making the commission. When I joined the Gender Commission, it was in problems and so on. I developed a general strategy for the commission with other commissioners as well. And I think when you look at the commission books now, we really see that financial management is one of the things. But I think what is a commissioner? A commissioner is someone, for me, that I would be bringing, that does not normally actually interfere with administration. Is a person who's actually able to actually have a high level of judgment on a number of issues as well. Is a person with an open mind about issues, and a person who actually is an interface for the organization, who will actually take people to his confidence as well. And I think my contribution is I will actually make sure that we advance and deepen constant democracy within the commission, bringing in the knowledge that have actually amassed in the Commission for Gender Equality, and also interacting with other institutions. And again, I will also make sure that we have MOUs with other important institutions like CCMA, like the Public Protector, the Gender Commission, the Human Rights Commission, so that we are able to actually define the space of duplication, how we should actually take these issues forward. For me, that's what is critical, Jacques.
Thank you so much, Seth. I really appreciate your response. Anything to say to the panel?
No, I would really want to know, Chair, when we are going to actually appoint and what type of a person who is supposed to be appointed by this committee. And I must also profusely thank the committee for shortlisting me and inviting me to be interviewed. And I think for me, whether appointed or not appointed, I think it should only give me confidence that the committee recognized me as one of the people who should be
Let me just apologize that you did indicate in terms of your belongings that have been stolen in the water. You are sorry about that. Secondly, is that in terms of the due processes that are going to unfold, we'll hear it from the administration, whether we are successful or not, or whether there is any other requirement that we may need from your side, but that one will be communicated in due course accordingly. Thank you so much, Rostro, and good luck.
Well, thank you very much.